Ryan Rashog from TSN, who is, I know, no cheering in the press box, but I know Rashog. He has got his red and black pom-poms on tonight, hoping for a Chicago Blackhawk victory so he can return home, as the Rashog Report brought to you by Bell Van Construction. Shogger, how are you?
I'm doing good, buddy. Yeah, I'm, no, I won't be openly cheering for anybody, but, you know, 2.5 weeks away from home, definitely the idea of flying direct tomorrow morning back to Edmonton is nice. I will not deny that.
Yeah, why would you? It totally makes sense. I get it. I totally get it.
But at the same time, it's kind of like, yeah, game 7 of a Stanley Cup final is always pretty wicked to cover. So I've done it before. And so I'm torn. I'm torn between the sports professional in me that wants to see it and the dad who just wants to get home.
Yes, game 6 in Chicago. They haven't won a cup there in almost 4 decades. That city would be going bananas if they win. Kucherov, I know he wasn't skating. What's the scuttlebutt you're getting? Is he going to be in the lineup tonight?
We think that he will be in the lineup tonight. He stood in, or he came into the dressing room for one question and said he's going to take warm up and he'll be a game time decision. But John Cooper in his press conference characterized him as probable. So we think there's a good chance. Yesterday the news was he wasn't as bad as they thought. Update today, and today the update was probable. So to me, all those signs point to him being in the lineup tonight.
If he can't go, what do you think Cooper does with his lines?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, Drouin will stay in the lineup if he can't go. I mean, Drouin might be in the lineup. I'm not sure if he's going 12 and 6 or 11 and 7 or kind of what his plan is. He gave Stamkos some looks on that line with Palat and Johnson. He definitely took a few looks at that. Honestly, I'm not sure. I'm having a little bit of a tough time reading Cooper because, you know, I asked him a question today about making adjustments because you've lost a couple of games here and feeling like you want to shake things up a little bit versus staying with what's helped you, staying with what's allowed you to win. And he really sounded to me like he wants to stay with what's got them here. So that would indicate Killorn, Phil, and Stamkos perhaps stay together. And who knows, maybe Drouin draws in on that line with Johnson and Palat. If he weren't able to go. So it doesn't sound to me like Cooper's willing to make a bunch of changes. And when you think about after game 3, the changes Joel Quenneville made, I mean, he took Brian Bickle out of the lineup. He bumped Patrick Sharp up the lineup, rejigged his lines, and they've been pretty good ever since then. So Quenneville has that touch. But to me, Cooper seems a little more limited in his ability to elicit change in his team's play through change in their lines.
The Chicago Blackhawks, Ryan, every game's been very close. We haven't seen Patrick Kane, at least on the score sheet, very much, and really haven't seen Kane have those shifts where we just kind of come expected to, where all of a sudden the puck's on a stick and he's playing keep away for 30 seconds and everyone's like, wow.
Yeah.
Is he banged up? Is he due for a breakout, or we just got to tip the hat to Tampa Bay and their forwards and defense and how they've shut him down?
Yeah, I think we kind of have to tip our hat to Tampa Bay. I really do. I don't think he's hurt. I've been looking like crazy for any sign. Watching him at practice in the dressing room while you're interviewing, you kind of look like, does it look like he's got any ice packs anywhere, or does anything look like it's been iced? Does he have, you know, tensor bandages, anything? And I can't find any sign that the guy's hurt. So I think we probably just have to give a whole bunch of credit to Tampa's defense, to Victor Hedman, Anton Strahlman. I think they've done a really good job on him, and I think it's been frustrating for Kane. Do we expect a breakout game from him? Well, if you look at Patrick Kane in this year's playoffs, in games where Chicago has had a chance to eliminate the other team, and there's been 4 of them, he has 9 points in those 4 games. So now, this is the Stanley Cup final, and it's different, but when it matters and a series is in the balance, Patrick Kane shows up. Now, he hasn't yet in this series, so you'd think, well, what leads you to believe it? That stat tells me, yeah, maybe he'll be able to find that level you just talked about tonight.
Yeah, you think eventually it's going to happen based on his past record, but the Blackhawks...
Well, he's just too good.
Yeah, and the Blackhawks have proven, though, you look at Jonathan Toews' years where he was invisible offensively, they still get to the conference final, right? And he's never been a huge, even point-wise anyway, in the Stanley Cup finals. And that's why it's good teams that win, not necessarily just having great individuals. So because when one of your top guys doesn't step up, you've got enough depth for other guys to emerge and be those guys. And Chicago, even though I don't think they've outplayed Tampa Bay in this series, when I look at their team across the board, I still feel they've got more guys who will find ways to elevate when necessary.
Yeah, and that makes sense, right? They've got guys who've been in these situations before. They have players who are reliable, who know how to handle the pressure, players who aren't going to balk at the spectacle of the whole thing. And over in Tampa's dressing room, they just don't have as much of that. I mean, they really don't. I mean, Valtteri Filppula is the only player on that team that's won a Stanley Cup. 95% of their lineup tonight has never done this, whereas most of Chicago's has, or a big chunk of Chicago's has. So, yeah, all of the odds stack towards the Blackhawks. Here at home, the Madhouse on Madison, their fans, especially if they score the first goal, you know, first goal is meant every game in this series. I think it'll be definitely, it all stacks up. But I tell you, there's something about this Tampa team. And even though they're banged up, even though they're hurt, even though Stamkos hasn't been that good in producing, I don't know why it is. I just have this gut feeling like we're going back to Tampa for game seven. Honestly, we talked about it on the morning show today, and I guess you cover a series start to finish, you kind of just develop a gut feel. And I chose Chicago to win in six, so I'm kind of going against what I originally said. I think Tampa has a chance to win this game tonight. I think they might. And there's something about this team, about the quality that they can get out of Bishop on any given night, about the quality of play from Victor Hedman. Now, John Cooper needs to, in my opinion, he needs to stop overthinking it on the bench and roll his best players out more. It has to happen. Like, he can't have Stamkos stapled to the bench for five of the last 7 minutes in a one-goal game. Like, you just can't do that. He needs to play Victor Hedman 25 minutes tonight, not 22 or 23, and give Andre Schuster 13, 14. People think, well, what's the difference? It's a few minutes. It's a difference. It's having a world-class player on the ice more often. So if Cooper runs his horses the way he should, they have the ability to take this game tonight, and I'm going with my gut that we're going to a game seven.
Do you know what's his response to the minutes played and everything? Although, you know, Stamkos ever since game one, like, Stamkos played 21 and a half, 20, almost 22 the last three games. I think his minutes the last three games are pretty much where you'd expect them to be.
Well, Stamkos's minutes have come up for sure, but my goodness, 17 minutes and 17 seconds in the first game. Like, why does that have to happen?
Yeah, but since then, it hasn't been an issue.
Okay, but this is a Stanley Cup final. Why was that an issue in the first place? Why were we talking about that? Why did he allow that to happen? And so in a game where, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, I think John Cooper's made some mistakes. And I think he's made some mistakes with the way he's deploying his troops. And I think he's made some mistakes in the way he's handling his stars. And I think that in a series like this, I mean, I don't know that there is a better coach in the National Hockey League right now than Joel Quenneville in this situation. I don't know how you could say there is. I mean, he is the man. His record in games 4 through 7 of playoff series is unbelievable. It's up like 75-77% or something like that. Like, it's through the roof. Whereas games 1 through 3, he's like 50-50. I mean, series is in the balance. Joel Quenneville, and you could say, well, he's had the best team. Sure. But Tampa's got a great team. And John Cooper is fumbling the ball a little bit here and there with it. And to me, it's little things like that. It's overthinking it on the bench at the end of the last game. And, you know, out of TV timeouts and stuff, he's not going with Stamkos. He's rolling out Paquette. And he's just, to me, it's this, he overthinks it a little bit. And at the end of the night, I think he looks at the score sheet and goes, ooh, crap. Like, I just, he's made some mistakes. And to me, Quenneville hasn't when it's mattered the most. So, if he can just play this straight and get his best players on the ice more, they've got a chance.
Bishop, and he's actually a very good puck handler, and that's what was so strange about that goal in game five, right? And you wonder if any of that was connected to him not being healthy, just, you know, maybe hesitating or something, or was it just one of those kind of brain cramp kind of plays between two of Tampa Bay's best players.
Yeah, you know, that was interesting. And that's the thing about Bishop is he is a very good puck-handling goaltender, and he's got lots of confidence handling the puck. I mean, you watch him in practice, he's always handling it. Between drills, he's always farting around with the puck and flipping it up on his stick. And I mean, he loves to have that puck on his stick. But what comes with that is a certain confidence. So he sees a play that most goaltenders in that situation would be like, no chance. I'm standing here. I'm guarding the net. No chance. He sees that same play and thinks, oh, yeah, I got this. I can get that. Like because of the confidence he has in his own ability to handle the puck. Now, game 35 of the regular season, that's one thing to, I'm going to go for it. Stanley Cup final game, game 5 of the Stanley Cup final with everything hanging in the balance, you make the decision to, you err on the side of caution every time in that situation. But he's so confident that he didn't. He thought he could get it, and he went, and it was no good. The decision was the wrong decision. He should have just stayed put. So I think, you know, having a great puck-handling goaltender is a good, positive thing, but he needs to have superior judgment when you get onto this stage. And he showed himself to be a guy who the judgment wasn't great, and it cost his team a goal.
Ryan Rashog joins us. Shog, there's been so much talk about Dougie Hamilton and offer sheets over the years. There's only been one player who's switched teams in an offer sheet since 1998. Nine, of course, that was Dustin Penner going from Anaheim to Edmonton. There's only actually been 8 offer sheets registered in that same spot, time span. The Oilers did offer 2, Vanek or Buffalo matched. Then, of course, Anaheim said, we'll take the first, second, and the third. As I was researching the offer sheets, did you know that in the history of the Oilers, 6 times they've had one of their players receive an offer sheet?
I did not know that.
Do you know any of them?
That's exceptional. Who?
Well, the first one was Jeff Cortnell back in 1988, which I honestly...
Yeah, you're going way back.
I remembered 4 of the 6, but I did not know that one. And then the Oilers, in something I didn't even know, they had the right to match the offer. They traded their right to match the offer to Washington for Greg Adams, and then Washington matched the offer. Really strange. I didn't even know you could do that.
Are you allowed to trade the right? So you're just trading the player before you have to decide?
Is
the way that works?
Yeah, well, you could do it then. I don't even know if you could do that in today's CBA.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a good little loophole.
The Adam Graves in 1991. I remember that one because I remember Sather was livid because the Rangers, and it's funny, it was a 5-year deal worth $2.5 million total, not per year. Right, and but Graves had scored 7 goals, and Sather was seething. Are you kidding me? So he didn't match it, and they got Troy Millett as compensation, and then Adam Graves went on to score 30 goals 4 times and scored 50 goals in the 3rd year in New York.
Yeah,
so they
no
clearly
kidding.
Knew what they were doing. Dave,
well,
go
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, continue.
Dave Manson in the summer of 92 by the Capitals, the Oilers matched it. And I didn't know this next one. Craig Simpson and the Oilers in the summer of 93 couldn't come to a deal. San Jose had offered him something, but it was, I don't know if the league turned it down or he turned it down. All my research there was kind of confusing. But eventually the Oilers just traded him to Buffalo. But he was, he was given an offer sheet. Didn't know that one. The one I did remember, of course, was the Stephen Rice when my Hartford Whalers offer sheeted him. The Oilers didn't match. The Whalers had offered Robert Kron in return, but the Oilers said no. Yeah. They went to the arbitrator, and the Oilers got Brian Marchman. So that turned out to be a steal
there
of the deal.
Go.
Right? And then the last one, and Oiler fans might not remember this, but this is the best offer sheet return the Oilers have ever had. The St. Louis Blues offer sheeted Shane Corson a 5-year deal in the summer of 95. The Oilers had stripped him of his captaincy earlier that year, so obviously they weren't going to match, right? So they were going to get 2 first-rounders for Shane Corson. Mike Keenan didn't want to give up the first-rounder, so he offered the Oilers Curtis Joseph and Mike Greer. Joseph and Greer, and basically lost Corson on that offer sheet. And, I'd say the number one reason why they won the playoffs in 97 and 98 was Curtis Joseph.
So now, since then, obviously, they've just set the arbitration. Like, there's no choice in the matter anymore, right? There's no more negotiating compensation, I should say.
From what I understand, there's no arbitrator. Yeah, it kind of changes it because that definitely made it way more exciting, even if you go back to the Scott Stevens arbitration days, right?
Yeah, well, that's a beauty list. And you know the one I think of, too, is I think of the – because Philadelphia offer sheeted Ryan Kessler, did they not? Didn't Bobby Clark do that?
Yeah, it was a 1-year deal at $1.9 million.
Yeah, and I remember thinking, like, Kessler was an okay player at the time, but he was still very young and hadn't established himself even as a top six forward.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, oh, that's an interesting one, Ryan Kessler, hey? Hmm. They must really see something there. And, I mean, imagine if Vancouver didn't have the foresight to understand how good a player this was going to become. So, yeah, it's an interesting tactic. And you know what, Jason, maybe you've heard. I have not heard Pete Chiarelli answer the question about his philosophy on offer sheets. Hasn't been asked in any of the press conferences I've been at, because obviously it was the one where he was hired. And I would be interested to hear what he has to say. What's his philosophy on submitting offer sheets on other teams' restricted free agents? And if he would say, yeah, not an avenue that I would normally be willing to look at or take, and likely won't, or if it's we look at any and all options. I don't know what his philosophy is on that. Dougie Hamilton's a really good player. I think Boston will do just about anything they have to do to match. But I think we could see some in the years to come. I mean, for sure. I mean, Jacob Trouba's up at the end of next year. I mean, there are some good franchise-type players who you know, could possibly see it happen.
Yeah. I look at it, Drew Doughty a few years ago. Drew Doughty, this was coming off when he'd won the Olympics and everything. He didn't have a contract and didn't get an offer sheet, right? And ended up holding out for training camp for a bit. PK Subban, if those guys don't get offer sheets, and this is all in the last 3 years, like, I like Dougie Hamilton. I'm not sure. Like, if I talked to four different NHL scouts over the weekend, and I asked them about Hamilton, and they all said, you know what, we think he's a top pairing defenseman. But none of them would say, I think he's a top 10 defenseman. And if you're going to pay him $7 million, then you think he's a top 10 defenseman, and that's why I'd be surprised.
I don't think you have to think he is a top 10 defenseman. I think you have to believe he will soon be a top 10 defenseman.
Yeah, well, that was the question. That's how I worded it. And yeah. None were willing to commit to that, which I found quite interesting. Yeah. They said, man, I really like him. I'm not sure I could commit to say he's going to be a top 10.
Yeah, and I would say that about, I would agree with that on Dougie Hamilton, that I don't think he'll be a top. I don't think he has the dimension in his game in any direction. He's just a really good defenseman. Mm-hmm. He's not overly physical. He's got a decent level of offense in his game, but I don't see him as having this dimension that's going to propel him to being one of the game's best. But he's going to be a really good cornerstone defenseman for a really long time, and $7 million or $6 million is what you would pay for that. So, look, I don't know what Chiarelli's thought process is, how he feels about it. I know they're extremely high on Oscar Klefbom, and they feel he will be a top-pairing defenseman. I know they're very high on Darnell Nurse, and that down the road they believe he could potentially be a top three defenseman. Where it goes with Justin Schultz, we don't know. Other than that, there's nobody coming in this organization that you could circle and say potential top pairing guy. The rest of them are depth guys, from Davidson to Musil to Lalegia to all these other guys. None of these guys, I don't think, project out to be top four defensemen. I just don't think that's the type of players they have in the system. So they need some guys who are have the potential to do that. But I believe they think they have two already as it is, and that it's just a few years before they get there. So if that changes the thought process on handing a guy $6 or $7 million now, maybe it does.
Schauger, enjoy the game tonight. Hopefully you're going home.
Yeah, you too, man. Enjoy it. And one way or another, we'll talk tomorrow.
You betcha. Ryan Rashog from TSN.